Mr. Trimbat.
Your Honors, may it please the Court. Bosch would like to start its argument with willful infringement because it prizes its reputation. The Court below determined that it wasn't necessary for a party to know of the patents asserted to be found a willful infringer. That's contrary to law, especially the Gustafson case, which is right on point. Black and Decker has two families of patents, a family that issued to Smith, a Black and Decker employee, and a family of patents that issued to Domes. They purchased the Domes family, and the Domes family is the patents that are asserted in this
case. Is that the reason you, with knowledge of the patents, sent it off to China to be replicated, is because you thought it was invalid for inequitable conduct?
No, Your Honor. There is no evidence in the record that Bosch knew of the asserted patents.
What's it, page A24-250? Let me amend.
Change in all the voltage up or down of DC wouldn't have a problem. It simply says, change.
Would you patent damage only if trying to involve it? Is limited to a trying to involve it?
That's what the patent talks about. That's
no, I'm not asking what the patent. Is that your position? That this language means to be interpreted to mean a circuit that converts power, DC power, that converts the voltage of DC power.
Yes, Your Honor, that's right.
That's all what it means?
We believe so, Your Honor.
But it wouldn't cover converting AC power?
Not under the patent. Not on what the patent
and it certainly says. Wouldn't cover converting AC to DC or DC to AC?
That's right, Your Honor.
But what you're trying to limit us to is Figure 7, right? That seems to be a preferred embodiment. But it's claimed by those particular features that jump the power level up or down to account for differences in recharging capacity. Those are claimed in claims 4 and 5, which are dependent on 1. We would presume that 1 is broader. And indeed, Figure 6 shows us a broader embodiment. Why aren't you just asking us to limit ourselves to a preferred embodiment?
There are many elements of the preferred embodiment that we don't think should be incorporated in the claim. What should be utilized in the specification is, well, the specification should be utilized to determine what the patentee actually invented.
But the specification only refers to those step-up and step-down converters as embodiments.
Right, and we believe our position is, for example, a voltage regulator, which is not a step up or a step down.
The language of the claim is broad. Power conversion circuit. It's quite broad.
The only thing that's supported in the specification is using DC to DC converters to achieve the power conversion.
Well, but what's in Figure 6? We have Figure 6, just a power conversion. The conversion is moving the power from the radio to the battery pack and back and forth. Why isn't that an adequate representation of the invention?
Figure 6 relates to a system where the battery voltage matches the voltage of the radio.
Yes.
There's no conversion of voltage in that system. In other words, if the radio functions at 12...
Well, there's no conversion of voltage, but why couldn't, according to the district court and this figure, why isn't there a conversion of power in that it is moved from perhaps the battery pack to the radio and thus converted into two signals instead of one and operating to do two functions instead of one at the same time? Why isn't that the power conversion circuit represented in 6 and as interpreted by the district court?
If that were the power conversion circuit, if it were that broad, then there would be no way to find what's between. The claim 1 of the 059 patent requires the power conversion circuit to be between certain things. There's a spatial limitation. If you're willing to say that change is all you need, something that changes electrical energy, there's no way to know where to draw the line. Right? Everything changes electrical energy. The wire changes electrical energy.
Well, in Figure 6, you've got the converter between the power source and the battery and radio, right? Seeing that wrong? Comes in here? Split, converted.
Let me get to Figure 6. Okay, Figure 6, AC power comes in at 50 watts.
Yeah.
And then there's a transformer.
Yeah, exactly.
Which converts it to DC. Exactly. Leaves the transformer and goes to the radio.
Or to the battery pack, or to both.
Right.
Why is that the power conversion circuit?
Why is not the transformer the power conversion circuit? If it were construed to be the power, it's not called the power conversion circuit in the specification.
Well, where is the power conversion circuit in Figure 6?
In Figure 6? I don't believe there is one.
As you interpret.
Right. If you want to say that a transformer can be a power conversion circuit, right, then in the Bosch power box, there are transformers,
here and there,
and they're not between the power supply in Figure 6 is the block marked 30. If that's...
Yes.
Okay, see? If that is the power conversion circuit, the same thing would hold true in Figure 7. Same component. If that's the power conversion circuit, it's not. It can't be between itself. That's the power supply. The power conversion circuit can't be between itself and something else.
So you, in your reading, the power conversion circuit is 68 and 69 in Figure 7.
That's right.
Period.
It doesn't have to be a DC to DC converter. It could be a voltage regulator. We believe our position is supported by the specification. It's the only way to convert power from one voltage to another disclosed. We believe it's supported in the file.
Could you just, again, articulate what you think the correct instruction is?
Sure. The power conversion circuit is a plurality of DC to DC converters that changes electrical voltage.
And then the rest of the claim speaks to the load, whether it's what it's between, and the enabling stuff, artificial limitation.
Yes.
It seems to me that at least the enabling stuff seems to be incorporated in your definition of power conversion circuit. No. The enablement limitation. As you read on after power conversion circuit, it goes on to talk about the between, and then it goes on to say to enable. How are you construing to enable that removable power block? The rest of the one is there.
If the power conversion circuit has to function to enable the charging of the battery and the use of batteries at multiple voltages with the radio.
Something that would bother me with your construction phrase, it's a rather broad phrase, a power conversion circuit. And you're trying to get what seems to me to be a fairly limited interpretation. You say a higher bullet covers are those power conversion circuits that convert the voltage in the direct current. And my suggestion to you is if the patent is intended such a limited interpretation of this phrase, why didn't he put it in there? Why didn't he say a power conversion circuit that converts the voltage of DC current? That's all that, and there would have been no question about it. But the patent has a very broad phrase in it, and you seem to say that despite this broad language, we should interpret it in a very limited way, as you said, the specifications.
My time is up, but I believe it's also supported in the file history. The examiner, between his reasons for allowance, said, you're over the prior art because there's no DC to DC converters plural, in the prior art. And also, in the Black & Decker's in an office action, they say the preferred embodiment is a pair of DC to DC converters. And then right after that, they say this invention, referring back to the pair of DC to DC converters. We think our position is fully supported in the specification, the claims, and the file history. My time is up.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. I'd like to start by answering that question by saying what Bosch is asking this court to do is place itself in the role of the jury. They want this court to re-examine PTX 34.
Show me in the record the evidence of Bosch knowing.
I would start with PTX 34, which is the document the court alluded to earlier, where Bosch specifically talks about a DeWalt radio charger patent.
Okay. DeWalt's in the Smith family?
DeWalt is a company, is a brand name for Black & Decker, under which its radio is
sold. Yes, but is the DeWalt reference there a reference to the Smith family of patents?
If they meant the Smith patents, they would have said the Smith patents. I think there's ambiguity here that has to be resolved by the jury. There's also...
Well, ambiguity is knowledge. And if you don't have knowledge, it's a little hard
well,
to...
Well, that knowledge...
Particularly when we've kicked the standard up to recklessness now instead of negligence.
And if the knowledge is in the testimony of Mr. Gray, when he was asked in cross-examination, you say that you talked to Steve Cole and John DeSico. Correct is the answer. Question. About whether or not there was infringement of the Domes patent. Answer, of the Domes patent. Question. Right, the Domes patents at issue in this case. Answer, okay. At the time, I didn't know. That's testimony.
At the time, I did not know?
He said, okay. At the time, I did not know. The answer was okay, period.
What was the question?
The question was, that's the Domes patent at issue in this case.
Okay, I did not know the Domes patent.
Okay, at the time, I did not know that.
I think the okay, if I were listening to, I'm not present there, is the problem. But if I'm interpreting that, it's okay, I've got the question. I did not know the Domes patent.
Well, that's the problem with asking this court to put itself in the role of the jury. The jury was there. They heard the answer. They heard whether there was a pause or it was okay, I don't know, or whether it was okay.
Yeah, well, but I've got to find evidence that there was reckless behavior under the current standard in the law, and clarity of knowledge of the patent in order for there to be recklessness. And all you provided me is DeWalt, which could have been the Smith patents, and an okay.
I think if you really step back, based on this testimony, is the question Bosch could have asked, and that is, does the DeWalt patents mean anything other than the Domes patents in this case? They could ask Mr. Gray that. They could ask any number of their witnesses that. They did not ask that question. Because they were afraid
that
they
weren't willfulness. It's that they weren't willfulness. What's your burden to prove they were willfulness?
And in addition, I might add that in closing argument, Bosch's counsel referred to the Domes patents as the DeWalt patents.
Okay, can I move on just on the same area? But the judge here, and it's on A98, I think, of the appendix, says Bosch had legitimate defenses to Black & Decker's infringement claims. So that's what the court said. Why isn't that sufficient to defeat willfulness under Seagate?
That's not sufficient because you have to, under Seagate, you have to look at objective reckless behavior. What is their behavior? The district court used a standard in JMOL that's very similar to the standard set forth in Seagate. And she reviewed it under the standard that the extent to which the infringer disregarded the property rights of the patentee, the deliberateness of the tortious act, or other manifestations of unethical or injurious commercial conduct may provide grounds for a finding of willful infringement. Based on that standard, the district court looked at evidence of Bosch's willfulness and Bosch's competency, separate and apart from Bosch's duty of care. And it found under that standard alone that there was sufficient evidence of willfulness and competency to meet that burden.
We shift to the claim construction. Where's the power conversion circuit in Figure 6?
Figure 6, the power conversion circuit. Let me find it.
Are you converting power?
conversion circuit.
Conversion requires conversion. Are you converting anything here?
Could be seen in the diodes, which is directing.
Which?
Figure 6, you have the diode, but it is figure 7 that truly talks about converting.
Well, yeah, okay. Well, the figure 7, of course, is his point, that the power conversion circuit is...
Should be limited to a pair of DC-DC conversions.
It should be limited to something that is stepping up or stepping down power, as in 68 to 69 in figure 7. And it's not present in 6, right?
It's not present in 6. There's no conversion.
And is the district court wrong?
The district court is not wrong because there's other instances in the patent, and specifically in the claims, that would indicate that claim 1, the power conversion circuit, is not limited to a pair of DC-DC converters. For example, if you look at claim 2, that is a dependent claim which gives further meaning to the power conversion circuit. And it says, wherein said power conversion circuit includes a first converter circuit for receiving said second DC output voltage.
I understand the point about the dependent claims. Is there anything in the specification, however, that describes conversion in any way other than using the DC to DC converter?
If you go to the summary of the invention, and this is in specifically column 2, line 63, it talks about a DC/DC power source converter for supplying power to said radio. And that's used in the singular. And if you look at the prosecution history, really explains what's meant by power conversion circuit. It says that if you look at right in the first paragraph of an amendment, remarks made to an amendment, and that's 22839, that a significant feature of the present invention, which is neither disclosed nor suggested in the reference of the record, is the provision of circuitry, not specific DC-DC converters, not a pair of DC-DC converters, but the provision of circuitry in the subject invention that allows portable radios to operate on various types of conventional batteries. The next page of that office action, it says that this is made possible by the provision, by the power conversion circuit that adjusts voltage that is supplied. And then the next sentence really gives a meaning to this. It says, in the preferred embodiment, the power conversion circuit is implemented by a pair of DC-DC converters, indicating that there's other embodiments, there's other ways to go about this other than a pair of DC-DC converters.
But the problem we have is the district court has interpreted more broadly than that. Anything that changes electrical energy, whatever that means.
Well, if you look at throughout the prosecution history and the patent, the word change, the word adjust, convert, reduce is used, which also means change. And electrical energy is just another word for power. In fact, if you look in the dictionary, if you look at specifically the way power is used with power tools, it refers to electrical energy. It defines power as electrical.
You said that change is synonymous with convert. Has that changed?
We believe so. It converts, adjusts, reduces. It's just a synonymous term.
Some change in the current, but it's a change that is made in the electric current. It's not a change from the electric current to heat or something like that. It changes the way in which the electric current is used in the device.
Yes, and you have to... And you have to look at the power conversion circuit in light of the other terms of the claim.
Where
talk about enabling
the accused device.
Where's the power conversion circuit? There's ample testimony that it was JK1 combined with IC4. And that JK1 combined with IC4 performed the function of the claim, which is to enable the battery to power the radio and to enable radio to be charged. And if you look at claim 1 of the 925 patent,
but you're not converting anything there, are you? Are you converting anything?
You're changing electrical energy.
Well, how do you change from what to what?
Because for the battery to power the radio, it has to go from 12. 12 to 24 volts to 6 volts necessary to power the radio.
At any voltage level? Are you reading the enablement to say that it allows it?
No, within a selected voltage.
Well, where are we getting that? I mean, where did you get the notion that at least under the to enable, under the claim term, can that fairly be construed as enabling it to power the radio or to charge the battery in any voltage? No. So you're saying we can construe that at what voltage?
Are you talking about the regardless limitation?
I'm talking about starting with an enable.
The power conversion circuit disposed between, say, AC power, DC power supply.
Regardless of the magnitude of the second DC output, if you set the DC power supply, doesn't that suggest that it doesn't matter at any voltage?
No, it doesn't, because you have to look at what is the magnitude of the second DC output voltage. And if you look at the preceding paragraph, you have removal of DC power supply, and it said set removal of DC power supply being selected to generate a second DC output voltage having a magnitude in a range. So you're talking about a selected range.
Having a magnitude in a range.
Having a magnitude.
Then includes voltage both high.
But it's selected.
So it can raise it or it can lower it, right? If it includes voltages both lower and higher than the magnitude set first, you say.
It doesn't necessarily say it can raise it or lower it. It says that it will operate within those ranges. It will enable within those ranges.
Well,
within the range of 12 to 24 volts,
where
it will enable.
Well, the claim language says magnitude in a range. Where is the specificity with respect to what the range is?
The range is selected, and the specificity is with respect to the selected range, either higher or lower. And that's the specificity. And if you look at,
by the way,
claim 7,
if I've got JK1 IC4 as my DCC, where's the between?
The between? And that's demonstrated in our brief, in the evidence in the brief, on page. On page 38. And maybe I'm missing the question.
Another contested limitation is between. Is it between? Where is the betweenness?
The betweenness is because JK1 is between the battery and the radio.
Yes. And
is the power supply.
Is IC4 as well between?
Is IC4 between? Not IC4 is between the battery and the radio. And it's the combination of the two. And looking at the elements of the claim that JK1 enables the battery enables the power supply to charge the battery. And that's the evidence reviewed by the jury. That's the evidence found by the jury. Once again, Bosch is asking this court to place itself in the role of that jury. If I may move on very briefly to I'd like to briefly discuss the injunction. That you have the district court specifically excluded a radio charger, a new radio charger, as Bosch described it, that existed at the time of judgment, but is not in this case. I think that the internal rectifier case gives guidance of what to do in this situation. In internal rectifier, this court said that supplemental pleadings are optional, and thus neither the defendant nor the district court had the authority to force the patentee to supplement his complaint. In essence, that's what happened here. The complaint was not supplemented. Additionally,
but isn't there considerable discretion in the district court to decide whether that is enough to justify overlooking it, or whether that's something you
expert report.
Did this court make the error, or did the other court dismiss?
No, it's this court that made the error in the first instance, because in the expert report, the expert identified the new product. He talked about the new product.
And what was that expert report submitted? Where is it?
It was submitted after the close of the fact discovery.
Discovery was over?
Discovery was over, but expert discovery had not closed.
Well, the district court would have discretion to decide, this is in time, I'll hear it, or it's not in time, it's a separate suit. They filed a separate suit, that's the problem, isn't it? It gets dismissed for estoppel reasons.
Well,
that's the one that ought to be appealed. That's the one you ought to be appealing, right?
Well, I think you have to look at, in this instance, it's two choices. It's not on appeal, no. The case isn't final because there's another patent involved in the case that's still going forward.
So it's not
right
for appeal instead?
Right. So when it is right, we will.
If we were to affirm in this case, do you then appeal that ruling?
If you would affirm in this case, we'd have no choice but to appeal and affirm that ruling.
That would give you the opportunity to determine how this issue should be litigated.
Well, there's two options. One is that route. The other is contempt. And Black and Decker was proposed.
Well, it would be difficult to say in a contempt proceeding when the injunction explicitly said it doesn't cover this. How can you be in contempt of the injunction for doing something that the injunction said doesn't cover it?
Well, that's where...
Normally, in contempt cases, if you have an injunction and someone makes a different product, and the question is whether a different product is covered by the injunction. Here the injunction says it doesn't cover the different product.
But isn't your answer to Judge Friedman? I understood what you're asking this court to do is to modify the injunction so that it doesn't explicitly exclude that product, so that you would be able to try at least to seek contempt.
That's correct. That's where the error occurred. If it's there, that's where we contend.
You've got to say the judge abused discretion.
We look at it as it should be reviewed de novo, because you're looking at the scope of the injunction. You're looking at specifically, for example, in case law, where you look at is
the injunction place this in the case in the first place would be a question of discretion, right?
Right, and if you look at the scope of the case that apply de novo review, they look at the mandate of the injunction, which here, the mandate of the injunction specifically excluded the product.
Okay, Mr. Nero, you used your cross appeal time as well. We'll give you back a couple minutes of that. Mr. Trimbat had 3 minutes. We need to give him two more so that we're still staying even. So he'll have five, and he'll have two coming back, Mr. Nero, and that'll be pretty close to even.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to address a couple of things that Mr. Miller talked about. JK1 is a switch. It's nothing more than a switch. It lets current flow from the power supply to the radio or from the battery to the unit. That's all it is. The voltage on both sides of JK1 is the same. It doesn't convert any power. As noted by the panel, the claim requires that radio-operated batteries below and above the voltage of the power supply. That requires necessarily two converters. IC4 is a voltage regulator. It sits right in the middle of the radio circuit.
So it's not between.
That's right. I would like to, when the time is just flying away, I would like to address some of their arguments on the injunction. We didn't get a chance because they raised some facts in their reply. I wanted to give the court some record sites. They say they couldn't have alleged infringement because there wasn't any sales. They took a deposition before the close of fact discovery. They learned that we had samples in the United States and we had tested those samples. That would give them a basis for bringing suit if they so desire. The sites for that is 8.
To not letting them put in any evidence. The question I have is with respect to the injunction.
power box, the power box advance was excluded because of a sanction, right?
Right, so they were excluded from bringing it forward in this case.
In this case,
and,
that's right.
Let's assume that we agree with you that court clearly had a basis for doing that. But even so, they were precluded from bringing it onto this case. That's their sanction.
Yes.
But how is it kind of appropriate to also impose a sanction? Did you call it a sanction? Does the district court say I'm imposing an additional sanction on you but not excluding it from the injunction?
No, but if she had included the new power box in the injunction.
Well, no, I'm not suggesting that, not that she included in the injunction. It seems to me there are at least three ways to go. Specifically excluding it, as she did, specifically including it, which I'm not suggesting. But the other is to be silent so that they can come forward on contempt and make whatever case they can make as to the similarity of that with the injunction, you know, that it comes with any whatever.
But doing that effectively negates her exclusion of the power box advance from the case. That's a sanction.
But didn't she exclude it specifically because there was another suit pending raising the issue?
She excluded the power box from this case because it wasn't described in interrogatory responses.
No, it was a discovery sanction. With respect to the injunction, isn't the reason she put in that specific exclusion in the injunction of the power, the new version of the power box, because she said that's an issue that is pending in another case now?
I can't speak to what she was thinking.
That's not what she said?
I don't recall.
Well,
she may have, but I don't recall.
I want to give us those sites real quick.
A8533, A8536, and A552. Also, they said that they disclosed the new power box in their expert report. I challenge Black & Decker to point to one piece of evidence in the record from their expert report that shows where they talked about the power conversion circuit and the new power box. It's not there.
What I'm bothered by is it looks as though, although there's a claim by Black & Decker that the new device is infringing, there's no way Black & Decker can possibly ever get that thing litigated. It can't get it litigated in this case because it was excluded from the judgment, and they try to litigate it in the second case. The district court said, well, you should have raised it in the first case.
If I might address that.
And that's it. It sounds a little unfair unless you say that this is the consequence of their own misdeeds in not raising it sooner in the discovery, at this time of discovery.
That's exactly what we would say. And Bosch was
this is the consequence of what they did. They can't complain that they have no chance to litigate this because it's the result of their own misconduct.
Bosch was precluded from meritorious defenses at trial for the same reason. And those defenses are forever gone. Bosch is now saddled with a damages award and an injunction on product. There is a balance there. That's what happens when you don't satisfy your discovery obligation.
Final comments, Mr. Turnback.
Your Honor, I thank the court.
Thank you, Mr. Turnback. Your Honor, we have...
Just briefly, I'd like to address the discovery. Judge Friedman, you asked why it wasn't brought in. The new Bosch power box wasn't available for sale until after discovery closed. That's why it was first included in the report of the expert.
But you didn't seek to amend any of your discovery submissions, did you? That said, we now want to amend this to point out there's a new product they're making. As I understand, this new product appeared only in this expert. Is that right?
We thought that was fair notice to put them on notice of the claim against the new power box. They had an opportunity to pose the expert with respect to his opinion on the new power box.
And the district court thought it was not sufficient, is that right?
That's correct.
You're asking us to say that.
But I'm saying, put that aside with respect to the injunction and the contempt proceeding. Whether or not it was a sanction International Rectifier said that one Black & Decker doesn't have an obligation to bring it into the case. And that this court has never held that you hand product into a case in order to go forward with a contempt proceeding. And that's all we want, is the ability to go forward with a contempt proceeding.
Well, what are you asking us to do? Just to delete from the injunction that exclusion of the new device?
That's correct.
The parenthetical thing that you put in there, you want us to strike that?
The specific exclusion of that product from the injunction order. We're not asking the court to decide contempt or make any ruling with respect to contempt. That would be done in a separate hearing under the standards set forth in KSM. And with that, I have no further.